My biggest goal from this is to get founders excited. We are not seeing enough entrepreneurship. And they should know that when a person who's been around this long, they may think jaded, gets FOMO, that means some big shit is happening.
What is that unique category truth that allows you to build this company?
Chakri, again, the founder of Country Delight, used to say it, and I will say it publicly, no investor or the board agreed with his approach and strategy, and everybody was wrong.
India mein businesses get built on ABCDL, astrology, Bollywood, cricket, devotion, and loneliness in some form.
Right? I think we'll look at, you weren't born then, but there was something called MS-DOS before Windows. Right? And I think ChatGPT is the MS-DOS moment.
And I think India might show the world what QuickCom for X could look like.
Hi all, welcome to the Zero to Infinity podcast. I am Kishan. I have with me here Avnish, founder and managing partner Z47, and CV Chandrasekhar, who leads all things consumer and consumer tech at the fund. We've got something really exciting in store for you today. I have given them the homework to come back to me and figure out what are the trend lines in consumer that we are really excited about. Great to have you gents here. Avi, I want you to start us off by setting up the context in which we're looking at 2025. How does the next 10 years, the next year and the next 10 years look like for the sector, and what are sort of the building blocks in place to start us off?
Yeah. And you know, I think many people who know me probably think I'm an eternal bull and I'm excitable, but I have never been as excited. And I think we'll cover this many things between this podcast and a couple of other ones that we will do. Just stepping back, people have often heard me talk about the whole India opportunity. We changed our brand name, right? Thinking 2047 backwards, thinking developed India backwards. The GDP at that time is supposed to be 30 trillion. Just to step back and keep things in context, it took us, I think if my math is not wrong, I think it's directionally correct. It took us about 75 years to get to the first 2 trillion, or maybe 70 years to get to the first 1 trillion. And then we keep doubling every 5-7 years, right? Because our nominal growth rate, you have to look at real plus inflation. So what happens is, this is a classic period that many, actually all developed GDPs in the world, developed countries in the world would have gone through. And very similar patterns play out. But the difference is, and I know you have a chart that we can, you know, show with the podcast, which shows China GDP growth per capita, India GDP growth per capita. Typically, the middle income journey is called $2,500 to $3,000 per person, going to $8,000 to $10,000 per person. To the extent people have heard about the middle income trap, it's also the trap. Many countries are not able to break out of it. Some countries break out of it and then get stuck, like Japan. So there are many things that come into play. But the important point is, when you look at those curves of going, China literally went from 2 and change to 5 and change in 4 years. We are going from 2 and change to, you know, 5 and change over a longer period of time. Could be 7 years, 8 years, 10 years. I actually think it's better because China kind of hit a wall. Anything that goes up very fast generally tends to hit a wall. But the point is, when you are in that, what is called the neck of the curve, like our neck, when you're going up, you actually don't know you're in it. And what happens is, everybody becomes smarter with hindsight and then says, but this happened, and therefore. The real people who capture the value see it while it is happening. It is happening now. So when you hear, and by the way, we all read the Indus Valley report, I think it characterized some of it. So there is the usual issue, is India too concentrated, this, that, whatever. If people get too much into that, they will miss the bigger picture. The bigger picture is, consumption is booming. We are going through this phase. Whether the BMWs and the Merck sales are an example, or many others which we'll come to, it's a very exciting period. It is going to continue in different forms. First for the next 5 years, then for the next 10 years, then all the way to 2047. So very excited. And then of course, excitable me is even more excited because of AI. And I think AI brings a big why now to it. So very optimistic about the country, very optimistic about consumer as a sector within that. India is a consumption economy. So if India is going to boom, which sector is going to boom the most?
Hindsight's always 20 on 20, right? But over the next half an hour or so, we'll push ourselves and I'll push these gentlemen on the homework that they've done. We will be discussing big trend lines. The number one's the premiumization opportunity and how that plays out. Number two is what we like to call full stack brands. And we'll cover more in detail. Then we'll talk about the microtransactions in consumer tech, media, social opportunity. Why don't you kick us off with the premiumization opportunity? How do you see that and what gets built?
Yeah, so you know, this is an example of something that we have, believe it or not, been doing it for 17 years. So people don't know that we, as erstwhile Matrix then, brought some of the luxury brands to India. So there was a company called Brand Marketing India, started by the Murjanis. And I may get some of the brand names incomplete potentially, but we had 9 brands. I know we had Ferragamo, Gucci, Build-A-Bear, La Senza. Then within that, we had Calvin Klein and FC UK, also as 2 brands. We lost money in all the luxury brands. But we made money with big thanks to Calvin Klein and FC UK. What does that tell you? It was too early. And if you look at India's GDP at that stage, I don't have the math exactly right, but my guess is it will be 500-700 million.
Right.
So we obviously missed that piece. So again, there is a phase where you know some of these things play out. So to me, so many things are coming together, and I'll park AI for a second separately. But I do believe that if you are going to build a consumer business, you have to build consumer backwards. The consumers are not just getting richer. They're also getting more discerning. They're also getting more digital. You know, experiences that you have, or now even my children have, they have very different experiences. And therefore, their expectations are very different. Yeah. Right? So I think we will, I think, unpack what premiumization therefore means. But I think it's an important takeaway of that is premiumization is not just more expensive things. It is potentially much more premium experiences expected by potentially everyone, right? So I think that's one important thing. I do believe it will create new markets. I know both of you are believers in pet foods. I wasn't. It sounds like it's getting created. One of the biggest interesting changes I've seen, all of us travel the world. When I used to go 15, 20 years ago, I could see the service that Indians would get was below what any other tourist would get.
Because we don't tip.
We never used to tip.
Yeah.
Today, Indians get the best service.
Yeah.
And everywhere I go, they're like, you Indians. Because by the way, we are used to a tipping culture. In Europe, they don't expect tips. So they just get blown away, right? So I think that's another example of, and I'm not talking about some of the good Jews around, but they probably, I'm joking. But I think that's very important. So I do think it's important to think about premium beyond just the price point and more as an experience.
Whenever we say premiumization, people immediately jump to luxury and they think yacht and they think these watches that are doing really well. Which are doing well. If you look at Ethos, for example, as a company, it's done really well, just selling watches to the top, 500 families in India? So yes, the luxury market is booming. But let's take a step back to say, what do we mean when we say premiumization? So in the ladder, there's mass premium, bridge to luxury, and luxury. So within this, I think the last 10 years has been about mass premium in some form. So this is the Mamaearths of the world, the Boats of the world in some form, right? And they've seen immense value creation. That was the right time to do it. Digital enablement, internet penetration, great time to build those brands. But now if you look around, suddenly premium brands are kind of there everywhere to see. So look at our rings. We are both wearing Ultra Human. I can see your patch come through the shirt as well, which means that penetration is really high. iPhone penetration in India, etc. If you look at brands like Mokobara or even newer brands like Comet, I would say that they're already sort of infringing on what feels like premium. So you don't need to go all the way to Tumi or to Louis Vuitton to see premiumization in India. My argument actually for this 5 years actually is that the exciting part is before the bridge to luxury. So true premiumization. What is a 2,000 to 4,000 rupee shirt? What is a watch that makes sense for a large part of India to wear, right? So many of these categories are waiting to get disrupted. That's caveat number one. I think caveat number two is whenever we think premiumization, we think it translates directly to brands, and it does. But there's a large part of services that also gets unlocked.
Right.
Think of how much you've been paying your barber for your recent haircuts and compare that to what it was 8-10 years back.
Right.
That's obviously seen an inflation towards just the quality of what it looks like to get into a barber's shop to barbers now coming to your home through Urban Company.
Right.
So premiumization is also services. I would argue a large part of what we're seeing in quick commerce is also premiumization. It's convenience, right? It's folks saying, I have extra cash in my wallet, but I'm going to start paying for convenience. So I think whenever we talk about premiumization, one, we don't need to go luxury. And two, we don't need to just go brands. There's a lot of segments that are getting disrupted and equally services.
Yeah, services. Actually, Qcom is a great example. And what we got wrong in our thesis, actually, they can be cheaper, cannot sometimes not be cheaper. I remember asking people who used to, and I have to confess, even me, I used to see the prices across because I just wanted the VC's money to be burnt and sent to my house for free. So I would actually go look at coupons, is that? Then, of course, I didn't have the patience anymore. And then if the SKU is available, I'll just go ahead. I sometimes don't even notice the 10-20 rupee delivery fee. Now, that could be argued that it's a very small market. No. So when I went and asked people around, people have gotten hooked. It's just a premium experience, as Siri is saying. Price point is not the issue anymore, right? And I do believe, because part of the objective of this whole podcast and, you know, the work we did, the event we did, is to ignite more entrepreneurship. I do feel that if I look back the last 18-19 years that I have been doing it, generally there have always been more entrepreneurs than opportunities in India, and great entrepreneurs ahead of the opportunities. I think right now it's the opposite.
Yeah.
I can think of 10 businesses I would start, and you know that the founder in me never goes out. Last time I felt the same was 2018. And that was when I could see UPI, digitization. So I thought, you know, I could start 5 to 10 financial services businesses or 5 to 10 B2B businesses. Right now, I feel 20 to, like, it's just so many, and because of AI also. And I do feel that our job and what we are trying to do here is to catalyze that thinking, because we know it. We can see it. It is happening. The data is showing up.
We can see it. It's happening. My favorite example is The Whole Truth.
Yeah.
I just closed this round as well.
Yeah.
And Shashank's point of view is to say, you know, I don't want to immediately cut down prices and reach this sort of mass price point to suddenly get scale.
Yeah.
I am okay to wait, provide the better experience for a premium crowd in India who is discerning.
Yeah.
And it's lovely to see the loyalty, the brand comments. They also sort of raised a large round right now.
Yeah.
So, we are seeing this in our MIS reports, I'd say, on a monthly basis.
MIS, data everywhere. You know, sometimes Indian GDP is slowing. This is, just ignore. This is a phase. I mean, we can get into why the GDP slowed. My view is it's already back up. There is one important, very important point here. When an economy is growing, like we have said before, there are many sectors which are considered pillars of the economy, which have the unique distinction of being deep and wide at the same time. Again, in the Indus report, it talked about deepening is happening, widening is not happening. Well, widening may not be happening for certain products, right? What does deep and wide mean? Consumers, every consumer is different. Why are there so many brands out there? Because different consumers like different things. I believe that, and in B2B is the same. Financial services is the same. Now, when markets are deep and wide, every sliver is worth billions of dollars.
Right.
And what I would urge people to think about is that it's not whether you have competition. And I know in the next podcast, we'll cover it. Founders don't start thinking about competition. They start thinking about consumers, right?
Yeah.
So my view is they should be thinking about consumers. Coming back to the earlier point, premiumization is everywhere. It's in services, it's in products, it's in financial services. So, you know, I was chatting with Anurag the other day, and we were talking about developed markets, and that's one card, a credit card, a digital credit card company. So we were talking about what are the opportunities, and he used a line that to me is very relevant for this discussion, which is, he said, I mean, digital is the new premium. American Express, we think of as probably the one of the best customer. I knew, we did a case study, Ritz-Carlton, American Express, best service businesses. Today, that's digital. Amex needs to play catch up. They are not as digital, right? So I think digital is the new premium, is a line that stuck in my head. KPI is doing something similar. So I think, you know, all of us like traveling. How broken is that experience? Yeah. I should be able to talk and tell somebody to just get it done.
Absolutely. Right?
So one way you sort of drive premiumization or give a premium experience is by controlling the entire customer experience, right? Right from the back end, the value chain, right to the customer experience. That actually brings us, sets us up perfectly for our second big trend line. CV, you brought this up. This is what we like to call full stack brands. Let me define and articulate it a little bit. Full stack brands is wherein you control the back end, you control the value chain, howsoever the supply gets curated, and you also curate the customer's purchase experience or how they could be a service or how they avail the service. CV, what do you think about full stack opportunity brands?
I'm going to pause you there, Kishan, for a second, because you said something that I think is very important, but we should make sure that at least we discuss it. We are saying full stack is a given. Why? Why do you think, you said one of the ways that people deliver premium experiences is full stack?
If you look at how consumer businesses evolved, right, over the years, a lot of the first cut of attempts were all thin stack, trying to do classifieds business, trying to put data together because data itself was unorganized in token. Then that became table stacks and consumers said, I have to put in the effort to figure out what is this and what is that. And at some point, consumers said, well, maybe I'll just go back to my older ways. And then founders came and proved us right or wrong and said, the only way to retain that customer, give them a memorable experience is to essentially control each part of that experience.
Yeah,
only happens full stack.
So I lived through this. So my story is actually an exact mirror of this. So first of all, I cheated. I know this is not a trend that is a 2025 trend. It's been a trend for what? 5-6 years now.
Full stack.
Yeah. And it's still underpenetrated.
But it's on steroids. It's on steroids now because absolutely, expectations have gone up.
Absolutely. And it's still underpenetrated, which is why I wanted to talk about it, right? So, caveat number one, this isn't just brands. This is everything. This is services, consumer tech. This is full stack in general, right? Avi, if you remember the first thesis, I think, in brands that you had sort of crafted was around DinWib. Digitally native and vertically integrated. I think it is true DinWib now because UPI and transactions online have just allowed for you to reach the customer directly in some form. And there is enough organized supply available for you on the back end to truly like create great products. So,
you know, just on that, just so we actually, when we came up with DinWib, Din was a little bit around service.
Yeah.
Web was for margins.
Yeah.
Today, I think it's table stakes.
Absolutely.
It is DinWib for service and quality.
Absolutely.
And that's what the premium customer wants.
That is the product. There is no product without the vertical integration. Yeah. So the backstory here is, as you may know, I was in Foodpanda earlier and we sort of had a, well, tumultuous sort of the experience towards the end. So it was very clear to us while we were running Foodpanda that the right way to do it is full stack. You have to deliver the food because the retention was double of what you would see in marketplace business. Wow. We had a marketplace business where the restaurant delivered the order and a full stack business where we delivered the order. And retention was clearly higher. We didn't have the capital to build that product out and there were enough global things happened that stopped us going on that journey. But the company that chose to do that, Swiggy, saw the retention that we saw in our own delivery service. Right. So full stack has been true for a while.
And Zomato followed very quickly and credit to Dipinder, he changed his mind overnight and went all...
Absolutely. And he stuck to the playbook, even Blinkit.
Yeah.
Now they're going full stack. Yeah. So there is a reason for you to capture that in the back end. Why is full stack interesting? So typically, you kind of build a 10x product, and I'm going to use Attenberg as a great product example, great 10x product, and then you somehow figure out what channel to sell it, right? Or you do the reverse. A new channel is opened up. Can I sell a slightly better cream? Can I sell a slightly better moisturizer? Right? That was the answer 5-6 years back. I make the argument to say, if you do go to the back end and capture the margin that's left for you on the P&L, and you acquire the customer directly on your own platform, then the business gets much bigger, much faster, because it's going to ride on retention. So what brands fill this hypothesis? Right? Lenskart is an example. Country Delight is an example. I would make an argument to say Ola Electric is the same example. What are these brands doing? They're uncovering a completely different price point at great margins. They're doing it so well that I make the argument to say they changed the frequency of the category. Spectacles as a category has now completely changed in its frequency because Lenskart's able to provide at $2,000, $2,500, you get two specs, right? And that's why I think these are very interesting. I think a great case study here is Country Delight. Avi,
you said something that stuck with me, and it's something that Chakri, again, the founder of Country Delight, used to say it, and I will say it publicly. No investor or the board agreed with his approach and strategy, and everybody was wrong. Today, no one will acknowledge that publicly. But I think I'll put it more so. What Country Delight has done or does is very clear. They use, you know, premium milk as a wedge. It's still 30% higher priced, but it is more organic and, you know, less processed. So it's 30% higher than, let's say, the comps of Amul Nestle type. Now, the importance of full stack, and I remember introducing Chakri to some of our other companies. And I said, why don't you want to do other products? Why don't you go with their products? And he said, it breaks my model. And it was so thoughtfully stitched together where the person is reaching the customer's house every day at, you know, because we all get milk deliveries. And then that becomes a basket. But to your point on full stack, but the basket could not be an aggregated basket. Yes. It had to be a full stack basket. And today, that business has month 60 revenue retention close to 100%, 80-100%, which is unheard of, right? Those are the businesses you want to run. I think the insight there, which Chakri had, which I think that, I mean, you can see it play out with Ola Electric, because they're coming up with product after product, is one which people don't talk enough about. If you are saying D2C consumer brand's edge is that you are close to the customer, you have immediate data, therefore you should be able to immediately action the data and come up with new approaches, but you need to control the supply. Otherwise, how will you come up with new stuff?
Yeah.
So when Bhavesh is launching your gig economy scooter or motorcycle, he's able to launch much faster. It's, you know what Zara used to say, from mind to market.
Yeah.
In 2 weeks or whatever, right? It's one of those mind to market, but you have to be full stack. And I think that mind to market is going on steroids. Of course, everything is going on steroids with AI. But I think that's where, if you say digitally native, new customer set, richer, different expectations, I actually think you cannot do this without full stack.
That's a great point. And now look at all the markets that have not yet been built in.
Yeah.
What is a Shein for X? What is a Shein for lab-grown diamonds? Yeah. So all these companies are waiting to get built. We have backed a few. We've got Ankush building Aramya, which is doing full stack ethnic products for women. We've got Akrosh building Shein for lab grown diamond jewelry for women in the US. So it's an exciting trend line. My push here is now there's a premiumization story, there's a width story, there's so many ways you can play it. Don't be scared of the backward integration.
No, and you know, as we were talking, I was also thinking about it. How would you actually do it? And I think full stack to scale.
Mm.
And I think people need to understand that. Even Mosaic, by the way, very early on, we backward one of our core products, which is best selling, we backward integrated into the factory.
Mm.
But that doesn't mean that we'll have to set up 10 more factories.
Correct.
What you can actually do, and McDonald's had perfected this playbook in the US, it was called vendor development. And essentially, and in India, by the way, there was a company, I don't know whether they listed finally, to the Blackstone investment called Cremica, which was for spices. Right. McDonald's developed them as a vendor, if I'm not wrong, and then they supplied to others. So you, full stack can also mean vendor development. Yep. These are your vendors. They work very closely with you. And at scale, my guess is you'll need some of them. So full stack to start, and then full stack experience you have to own, but you don't have to own all the assets. That's an important distinction.
Yeah, you control the experience. They need not reside on your books.
Yeah.
Makes sense. We discussed that full stack is one of the most efficient ways to extract the consumer surplus, right? Like, higher retention in Country Delight, for example, just on the back of being full stack. There's another great way to extract consumer surplus efficiently. It's more for digital consumer products. We move now to the microtransactions trend line. CV, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I'm super excited by this trend line. It's happening front and center. It's happening in front of our eyes. It's not something anybody predicted would happen 4 or 5 years back. And it's great to see.
So I was just going to interrupt you that, you know, we do many theses many times. and this is one of those few times where CV, Akash, few people worked on this and they said, and I think maybe you should give context that outside of microtransaction, what used to be the conventional wisdom, which was ads and this, that, and then, because I do think you guys called it right maybe 1.5-2 years ago.
Yeah.
And now it's just working.
Yeah. Happens rarely, but very rarely. We'll take the wins. So what was the story, right? The story is India is this large Mao Dao farm. You keep aggregating millions of people and eventually you show them ads and then you'll get $5 per user in a year, $10 per user in a year. So you do some ARPU math and say this is the valuation of the company, right? It wasn't a great business to build. A large part of the reason for that is ads completely shifted to closer to purchase. Right. So all of your marketing dollars started moving closer and closer to add to cart, right? As in the entire journey, which means your visibility, brand marketing wasn't really seeing returns. And when you aggregate all these millions of people, it also means you're aggregating Bharat a lot more than India. And that isn't a great segment to sort of visibility market into. Right? And hence, we went through this phase of, oh, dekho, India mein kuch nahi banega, etc. and all of that. Right? What was happening in parallel, right? And proving all the pundits wrong, the people spoke differently and said, you know, I'm actually ready to pay a small consumer surplus provided you give me value. And this is what we call 10 rupees per minute businesses. These are sachet businesses, right? I'm going to go back to something Vikram and I were discussing yesterday. And he said, CV, dekho, media mein businesses get built on ABCDL, astrology, Bollywood, cricket, devotion, and loneliness in some form, right? Now, a large part of this is not online. A large part of this is still offline. And a lot of that is moving to online. Now, this could not have happened, and I have those 4 points. This could not have happened if we didn't have the confluence of 4 things. We are time rich in India. We have cheap data in India. We are UPI online first in India. And we have a young demographic. It needs all of these 4 things for it to come together in some form. Right? So I would make the argument to say it's much more exciting given our GDP per capita to see India already embracing this. Some of these businesses are doing 40, 50, 60 crores a month, EBITDA profitable. You just can't stop the business from throwing cash out.
Right.
Why is this interesting? A large part of this market is not even online. Religion's 2.5 to 3% of GDP. A large part of it isn't online. I would argue a large part of it isn't measured also in the 2.5%. That needs to come online. Puja, Chadhava, etc. is an example. Second part, content in India has always been pay a subscription for $200. Versus US has already seen real shorts. Watch 5 videos. You have a millionaire boyfriend who is also a werewolf. And then you're building a story around that. But every 5th story, you have to pay a couple of dollars. Right? Now, those are seen as great, as fantastic indulgence opportunities by Bharat. And there is a lot of judgment on, oh, you know, you're taking consumer surplus away from Bharat is going to waste because somebody's gifting 5 rupees for a creator rose. But I'd actually make the reverse argument to say, how do we flex signal? We went for a Coldplay concert. Look at my shoes. Look at my sneakers. For Bharat, this is more around, hey, you know what? I was recognized today. I was able to show somebody my support by paying a 5 rupees, 10 rupees. I was able to indulge in an extra 10 minutes of video watching today. I was able to play Ludo with my friends at Zupi. Right? And hence, this is very exciting. The why now is here. There are enough companies that have gone from 1 crore to 10 crore a month in the last 12 months. It's super exciting. Looking forward for founders to build here. I'm going to go back to the point we made earlier. I think the answer here is getting close to the supply as well. This is not a thin marketplace business. This is not an aggregate your services business. You got to be really sharp. What is the service you're offering? If you're Astro, provide Astro well. If you're doing the media content, create content that is not replicable and unique to you and low cost that allows for you to build the business. So it comes back to what can you unlock on the supply, which...
I actually think there's another why now here, right? Like if you have to control the supply, there's the billion pound gorilla called AI, right? Yeah. Like you think about your content production, right? Think about the quality of production, the depth of the storytelling, the richness of it. I think AI will just sort of flywheel some of these. If content production is sort of that cost is under control, you're able to acquire new users on the back of the depth of your catalog. I think these businesses flywheel much faster now, right?
So even AI, more, you know, think about it very, very, if you just zoom out, you're talking about many millions, when we say microtransactions, let's say hundreds of thousands, millions of small, small things happening.
Right.
If you needed humans, you have a problem. It won't work. It can only be on the back of technology. So I do think it's the commoditization of AI with your DeepSeek and the models and all of that, if used well. And also personalization on steroids, understanding the person. You know, I know we were going to talk about AMP later. I'll just talk about it now. I remember Paul, so AMP is, you know, agentic infrastructure company, which also recently raised money externally. I remember him explaining to me what was going on in an e-commerce site. And he would say, you know, then this person, this agent will talk to them. I'm like, with what agent is it? It's an AI agent. So I said, around one person, how many agents do you have tracking them? So it's actually not around one person, around a particular user experience on any site. You could have millions. And for every pixel, you could have something figuring out at scale, right? So I think AI brings lower cost commoditization of something that will become, I think, therefore, could take this trend even to the next level.
I have a question there. Yeah. Does that mean these businesses will be built more capital efficiently, or is there a lot of groundwork you have to build on the AI piece to then?
No, much more capital efficiently. And by the way, my separate topic, but my new view of the, I used to encourage a lot of D2C businesses, every business to hire a CTO, build a world-class tech team. And, you know, some founders decided to listen to me 2-3 years later. They said, Avi, now we are planning to hire a CTO and a world-class tech team. I said, no, those days are gone. Today, world's best tech organizations will have 5 to 6 product managers who will aggregate everything that's available for free.
Yeah.
They should have some level of tech savviness to be able to use no code, low code architectures and just put things together. So to that point, I think they'll be built much more efficiently, but they'll also help you find PMF.
Yeah.
Right? We know some companies that will say, acha, we will launch do a ghanti in the morning. And if I launch the ghanti app or ghanti feature on the app, what is the retention cohort? But that's all lagging indicators. Yeah. With AI, you can say, do you want the ghanti? Should you have the ghanti? Or is it some, bhajan in the morning? Or if it's something else?
Yeah.
I think it's a game changer for this sector.
Yeah, makes sense. Actually, that brings us perfectly to the fourth trend line, chapter number 4.
Coming soon, part 2.
What does Flipkart, Myntra, Nykaa, Make My Trip, etc. possibly getting disrupted looks like?
Everything is in place now. The market is in place. The GDP growth is happening. So many unique to India things playing out.
Commerce will continue and maybe Amazon will build its own chatbot. But there are so many sectors which are not online yet. Like PropTech is still what? At 1.0? You're at classifieds level still.
Consumer founders should really be thinking that AI is my why now moment. Of a moat against incumbents as well as competition.
Digitizers are very interesting businesses. Large TAMs always been fragmented.
Everything is waiting to be disrupted.
If you like this episode of Zero to Infinity, there are so many more that you must check out. If you like Indian startup content, hearing about founder journeys, or knowing more about emerging sectors that we're investing in, Zero to Infinity is the channel that you need to subscribe to.